Hi everyone and welcome to There's a Workshop for That. I'm Nathie Revez, your host and the founder of La Workshoppeuse. If you are as passionate as I am in the power of facilitation, you are in the right place. On this podcast, experts in the field join me to share their experiences, insights, and practical tips. So whether you're a seasoned facilitator or simply curious about how well-designed and facilitated workshops can transform teams and organizations, this podcast is for you. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episode. And if you like what you hear, please give it a 5-star on your podcast app. So now, sit back, relax, and let's dive into today's topic and meet our guest. Let's go. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Jenny Martin to the podcast. Jenny and I crossed paths in the Workshop and Master program 2 years ago. And I really love following her inspiring journey on LinkedIn. She has always good tips and a positive vibes that I really like. She's known as the collaboration coach. Jenny is all about helping teams connect, collaborate, and unlock their fullest potential. She's a dedicated facilitator in product development and innovation, bringing teams together through immersive methods like Lego Science Play and strong suits. We will talk about it today. Welcome, Jenny. How are you?
Hi, I'm really good and really delighted to be here. So thanks for having me.
So we know each other since 2 years. You were with me in the Workshop and Master program. And it is so nice to be in such community, right? Because you meet a lot of people, right?
Yeah. Suddenly you feel sort of surrounded by your crew. And I don't know if you felt like that as well, but yeah, I felt like all of a sudden I was surrounded by people who were ready to hold space for me. If you don't know what, I'm used to being the one doing that for everybody else. So yeah, quite a nourishing experience. Yeah,
like a tribe where you can finally find people who are as much excited as you are in leading groups to solve problems and foster creativity, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jenny, can you tell me a bit more about your background? Sure, you've done a lot of things before you fall into facilitation.
Yeah, sure. So I took a degree in psychology and then really didn't know what I was doing and just fell into a tech consultancy company and just spent 25 years working with tech teams before I knew it. So I was working on big delivery teams, agile stuff, running teams, delivering big projects. And back when agile became a thing in the early 2000s, I was really drawn to all the really collaborative parts of that, where people were actually doing work together and co-creating. And at the time, people didn't really know how to collaborate. So they knew they needed to work together, but they didn't really know how to do it. So I found myself running lots of workshops and facilitation within teams, within organizations I was working within, and trying to develop new methods to help break down silos and help them work together and get work done together. And so I guess I set up my own company back in 2011. Where I started running training in these software, collaborative software development practices and product development stuff. I was able to do that because I took a job at a startup. So I was able to kind of do both, which allowed me to grow my training business as well as having, you know, some employment. So I was an agile coach as well, consulting. I did my Lego Serious Play, master trainers training 7 years ago. So I was using that within my training and within software development teams. And then 3 years ago, I became completely independent. So I made a decision to stop doing any consulting while I was actually embedded with teams and just focus on pure facilitation, training, workshops, workshop design, all of that stuff. So that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years. And I've been, I know you're going to ask me about this, but I've been gravitating through that time. I've been gravitating more towards the people stuff and the psychology stuff, the stuff that's always really motivated me, seeing teams flourish. So I've been doing more of that, which I've been really happy about. So it's been a real privilege for me to be working more with teams and high performing teams, as well as continuing the kind of product stuff as well. So
it means the circle is not closed, but you study psychology. You didn't know what to do. And now, years after, you are working exactly using what you've learned from the beginning, right?
Yeah. And it's a kind of interesting journey, because that first sort of 15 years working in this big tech consultancy company, everybody around me had IT degrees, and my psychology degree was a bit of a dirty secret. Do you know what I mean? They sent me to Dallas and tried to train me up and turn me into a programmer, which never worked. So I spent 4 months in Dallas at this boot camp. Yeah, none of that stuff ever worked. So I've clawed my way back.
By the way, I really love the heart that is behind you. For the listeners who don't see it, you can go on YouTube and see the videos, but she has a big heart behind her changing colors. It's, I'm very jealous about this.
Yeah, I love it. I was sucked in by an advert. And I thought, oh, I can make a heart shape for that. I can make a heart shape for that. So yeah, changes any color you want.
So I saw that you recently, grade in the psychology of kindness and well-being at work. Can you tell me more about this?
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, I've been doing more work with teams over the last few years, particularly around working with them to help them understand each other and develop their strengths and understand each other's strengths and, harness those. I felt like I've always believed that happy teams perform well, and that motivation comes from these intrinsic things about feeling appreciated and this mutual trust and respect. I've always believed that. And then this advert popped into my social feed somewhere about the postgrad in the psychology of kindness and well-being. I was like, I can be qualified in kind. I have to do this. And it's a brand new postgrad at the University of Sussex with lots of new research on kindness and well-being. And so, yeah, I did that. I finished that earlier this year. It was much harder than I thought it was going to be. But I really enjoyed it. So it was so rewarding spending all that time with other folks who deeply care about other people and compassion and spreading kindness and understanding and those kinds of things. And then to unpack all of the science behind it and explore all of the evidence, all of the recent evidence that's there that kind of says I was right all along about this stuff in terms of what motivates people. It was really, really, really great. And it's given me, you know, I'm a bouncy, smiley, happy person. I turn up in a love heart jumpsuit or something like that. It's given me more credibility than just a big smile. So yeah, it's been absolutely fascinating. And that's drawn me even further into this work with, you know, with teams that I've been doing that I was mentioning.
Yeah. Because you mentioned your deep skill to help team flourish. What does it take to make individuals or a whole team flourish? What are the key elements?
Yeah, so there's so much to it. I mean, in my degree, in my postgrad, right? So one of the most well-known frameworks now is a framework called PERMA, which stands for positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, and accomplishment. And so all of those independent things are really well researched to demonstrate that these are the fundamental things that drive our well-being. And of course, this is true in the workplace as well. So flourishing, all of those things about having a team really strongly aligned to a goal and a sense of purpose, that what they're doing ideally has some stronger meaning for them, that they're, you know, that they're personal values are lining up with a bigger cause, you know, that's where you really get extremely engaged team. In terms of flourishing individually, it's all about being accepted and understood and being yourself and being appreciated and all of those psychological needs that we have as humans. So, you know, we often talk about the practical needs of our workplaces, but our psychological needs come from these things of autonomy and, you know, being able to engage successfully with our environment and be able to master new skills and develop and play to our strengths. You know, these are our psychological needs, and we need these things to be met in our workplaces in order to flourish. And often they're not met. And so, you know, my concern when I'm trying to get teams together is trying to meet those needs, meet those psychological needs as humans. And of course, terms like psychological safety and things like that come into there. So many things at play.
Yeah. And okay. And how do you create this psychological safety when you start to work with a team? I don't know what are the topics you are called for or you are hired for, but I guess maybe when there are difficulty of communication in a team or a new team and that need to be bound a little bit with each other, how do you create you, the facilitator, the external facilitator, this psychology, safety space in your workshops?
Yeah, that's a really fundamental thing, isn't it? And it applies to every single training course or workshop, regardless of what the subject is. So I run public speaking training, which of course is very important for people to build their confidence and feel like they're able to fail and make mistakes and kind of expose their kind of own vulnerability. So that's quite an extreme side. But even in a product, development training session, it's still important in order for people to contribute. So, you know, in terms of psychological safety, people need to feel safe to learn, safe to contribute, and safe to challenge. You know, those are sort of a set of steps to achieve that. And it's not something that you can just declare. You can't just declare an environment as safe. Mm-hmm. And even if you feel like you've created an environment that's safe, you can't even declare a safe space. You have to, because it might not be safe for everybody. I was doing some EDI training, equity, diversity and inclusion training yesterday. People talking about their experiences and their lived experiences in terms of discrimination. And that's like a real extreme of creating that space. It has to be built really, really gently with participation. So I try and do it very gently. I smile a lot. I listen a lot. I make sure I remember everybody's names. I work hard to pronounce people's names properly or ask them to tell me how to phonetically pronounce them so that I don't forget. So I do warm-up games where everybody hears and learns everybody else's names so that they can properly involve each other. I make sure that I go to people who are naturally a bit more reserved and give them time, not just time to answer a question, but time to think. So it's really important in our training that we provide time to think. Yeah. So that some of us, like me, I'm dancing around, performing, I'm an extrovert. I'll come very quickly with my thoughts, very, very quickly with my thoughts. I always think I know the answer. More deliberative people, more introverted people often have the best stuff to say, right? Because they've thought it through. They want it to be more evidenced and, you know, more measured. So it's really important that you build in time to think. I think the other thing which, so I follow, I think you probably follow as well, Jan Keck.
Yeah.
Who talks about ice melters. Ice melters. So try not to break the ice too fast, you know, try and slowly melt it. And often that's a really simple, like just having people talk in pairs about something which is relative to what they're about to do, that's related. Have them talk in pairs. And that sort of sets the expectation for participation. And of course, you can't hide from a pair. You know, everybody contributes. So, because there's so much to it. There's so much to it. I often, at the beginning of a session, will ask the group, what do we need in here to feel that we're able to contribute to our fullest? What does that mean for us all? How does that look? What do we notice when we're feeling able to be our best? And how can we, how are we going to show up today and, you know, take responsibility for this thing that we're setting in here today? How do we hold each other accountable? So I guess it can be, this is a long answer. I guess if it's really, really tricky and you've got some conflict, you'd work even harder to set those rules and say, okay, so how do we challenge each other respectfully? What language do we use? How do we, those of us that talk for 80% of the time, how do we deliberately give the other space? How do we call each other out if we're taking too much of the space? You know, what gentle way can we nurture each other into a space that we're all comfortable in? And so, yeah, there's so many layers to it.
Yeah.
So many. I could talk all day on that one question, I guess.
Me too. I think one thing that I like to do is to get the expectations or wish of the participants even before the session, when you don't know the team, so that they get, even if it's only 15 minutes, but you'll get to talk with them and give a few information in advance what it will be about, and so that they can prepare. Yeah. And as you said, and as Jan say in his beautiful course he's doing about Team the Ice.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I've done his course. Yeah.
You've done it. Yeah. He explained
Yes.
He was on the podcast. He explained the same, that you cannot break from the beginning. You have to go slowly and to always have touch points where you maybe also bring people together to talk in small groups. Like you said, also giving a time to think and reflect and also digest information. So sometimes we have to be just silent as a facilitator. It gives not only the space for the introvert to think and pose their thoughts, but also the extrovert to not react and to take a few minutes to think. So I love this. You know that you have a lot of methods you like to use and tools you like to use in your workshops to foster also creativity or to foster alignment. Let's talk first about League of Serious Play. You certified, you told me,
7 years ago.
Seven years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Oh, it's wonderful. So the training that I went on, I think you can do different types of training now, but I did a 4-day immersive training in becoming a LEGO Serious Play facilitator. And I embed it in almost everything that I do. I don't always lead with it or say this is LEGO Serious Play, or I do run LEGO Serious Play workshops, but I build it into almost everything I do, just a little bit. And one of the reasons for that is because the things we were just talking about, it's really, really useful for. So giving time to think is just extremely useful. Mm-hmm. So when you use LEGO Serious Play, if you don't already know about it, you essentially answer questions with LEGO. You pose a question or a challenge, and you'll build a model that represents the answer. And so it's storytelling and metaphor. And the building part is in silence. And so it gives the build part for a typical question tends to be between about 6 and 10 minutes. And so you have 6 to 10 minutes of silence, and that gives you time to answer. It gives you time to think. And often things that you didn't even know you believed or thought surface during that time. And then when you share your model, it's not at all political. you can only talk about what's on your model, right? So there's no ego, there's no politics, there's no he said, she said. Your model is always completely right, and it represents your thoughts. And so it can't be challenged. And so in the third stage, so first of all, you pose the question, then you build. The third stage is sharing your model. And I encourage everybody to just watch and listen and give the person the gift of their attention as they describe their thoughts and models and be curious about it. And that gives the person this time to tell their story and their narrative without being interrupted and without being challenged and with it being completely right. And so it levels the playing field. There's no hierarchy. There's no dominance. It's everybody contributes equally, and it's a really thoughtful process. And then of course, if you know about legacy, is play the extensions of that. Those thoughts get combined into shared models with where everybody's concepts are wholly represented in this answer, which is amazing. But I'll work it into training by, often at the beginning and at the end or while we're reflecting. So, build a model representing one thing you've taken away from today. So it's so simple, but it's just an opportunity for people to just digest the thing that they've just heard or what they've just explored and think about what it means to them and then share. And so that's such a simple thing, but it brings in, of course, I love the playfulness. People stay engaged with it. So it's really good to do in the afternoon when you get that slump. It's wonderful stuff. I do, in my product delivery, 3-day course at the beginning of the first day. I don't know if you, know Sharon Bowman's Training from the Back of the Room.
Yes.
The most wonderful. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So many trainers follow this. The 4 C's. I'll see if I could do it now. Connections, concepts, concrete practice, conclusions, right? So this is like the 4 C's that you're trying to use within your training. And so at the beginning, as part of connections exercise, I ask everybody to build a model that represents a pain that they're experiencing in a typical agile team or a typical project team or a typical product team. And these universal thoughts come out, like customers up on pillars and teams and business team, engineering teams and business teams facing different ways and big bridges and obstacles and complexity. These things always come out in the models. And we build it into a shared model of pain and we put it on the table. And these are our pains. We do that right at the beginning, gets everybody connected, sets the context. It gives me a chance to understand the challenges that they're facing and for them to explain them. And then each day, at the end of the day, we come back to it and say, okay, some of the things that we've done today, how do they help with these challenges, this monster that we've built? And the team will say, oh, I think we can take this bridge down now. Or I think we can make the customer face this other way. Or I think we've brought these two teams together with these practices and techniques. And then I notice through the training that people will be talking about something and they'll point to the model, because they're using it as a shared ubiquitous language about the challenges that they face. So yeah, it's extremely powerful. I know I've given you these really long answers. It's extremely powerful, for all of those things.
No, I love this.
You're
really
passionate. I'm passionate.
Yes,
about
you
it.
Are. You are. I just use legos, and I'm not a legal serious play certified person. Absolutely not. But I got this exercise from a friend of mine. You know her, Andrea Stefanescu. And I use this exercise very, very often when I'm working with teams who need to change perspectives or need to understand that everyone in a team has different perspective. So I use the duck building exercise.
Yes.
They have exactly the same blocks. And they have, I don't know, 6-7 minutes to build a duck. And with the same elements, they come out, of course, with different ducks. So
yes.
this shows that, so the metaphor here is just that even if you get the same information as your colleague, maybe you digest the information differently and you come with another output or other thoughts. And so I love to use this exercise, but I really like the way you speak about Lego Serious Play. And I know that when you do things with the hands, it stimulates your thinking and creativity. So even leaders are very happy to use the Lego blocks. The best is not to tell in advance that you will use it, because sometimes if they can't imagine what it is, they are maybe not on board with this. But if you, when you use it in your session, it's really impactful, and people actually love to do this.
They do.
Okay, there is another method. So we talked about Lego Serious Play. We talked about the training from the back of the room. You are also using strong suits, and I would love to hear what it is and how you can use it in your workshops.
Yes, sure. So strong suits is a tool for team development and teamwork, basically. But it's strong suits. What that means is, you know, in English, we talk about a strong suit being a strength that we have. And so strong suits is a tool for exploring strengths individually and in teams. So I've been a fan of this kind of thing for quite some years. There's lots and lots of different strength-based tools that have been around for a long time. This is a big chunk of positive psychology, which is a big chunk of my postgrad that I did. So very briefly, what's positive psychology? So positive psychology is taking people who are doing okay and thinking about all the things that help them flourish. So before positive psychology was a thing, psychology was mostly about fixing people. It was about, you know, psychosis and personality disorders and anxiety and, you know, all of those things that you might need fixing. Positive psychology, talked about by Martin Seligman in 1990, is about all the things that help people flourish. And he was responsible for that PERMA framework that I talked about at the beginning. So there's loads of tools that explore strengths. There's popular ones would be Clifton Strengths Finder, where you do an assessment to find out your top five strengths. There's Strength Scope. There's DISC, which is based on communication styles. There's lots and lots of them. And I've always thought they were really useful because we are way, way more effective when we're playing to our strengths. And also not just that, but our propensity for growth and being awesome is in the direction of what we're already good at. And we spend all this time trying to fix ourselves and doing, you know, I'm gesturing behind me because this is my weakness right behind me. We spend all this time trying to fix ourselves. Whereas if we were better at finding what we're already good at, we'd be happier and more productive. And I believe that we don't need well-rounded humans. We need well-rounded teams. And there's a beautiful individuality that appeals to me about all these wonderful, beautiful variations of the human brain, all being perfectly formed to perform in a given set of circumstances. We need to find out what that is for us all. So that's a big, long intro. Strong suits. The reason I like it is because you don't need to do a big personality test. You don't need to pay to go and do a test online. So I've run workshops using the other tools before, like Gallup Strengths Finder, I've got all the materials for that. But as a facilitator, if you turn up and two people haven't taken the test, you can't run it, right? Yeah. You can't run it. Whereas this is based on similar stuff, but you can, as a facilitator, you can just whip them out of your bag, of your kit, and get teams playing, and without even announcing it, like with the Lego Serious Play, you don't have to announce it. You can just whip the cards out. And so these cards, a bit like Gallup Clifton Strengths Finder. There's 34 strengths in there. Within these deck of cards, there's 52 because they form a deck of cards. And they're all strengths, innovation, enthusiasm, steadiness, easygoing, diplomacy, kindness, listening. They're all strengths. And we all have them. And the games involve teams figuring out which strengths they associate most with themselves and each other. There's also layers of stuff. There's too much to go into. There's lots of other strongly researched strands of positive psychology in here around communication styles, represented by the suits, about challenging and opposing strengths. So there's loads of things you can do which help people not just understand their strengths and see themselves in that positive light, but also understand each other. The one thing I love about these is that each of these have like an overplayed. So I take a common sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is common sense. It's a strength. I take a pragmatic view of things based on experience. It's a strength. If I turn the card upside down, I get the overplayed strength. So people might sometimes find me lacking in imagination when my common sense is turned up. And so that's for me just such a beautiful thing because it frames everybody's weaknesses as too much of their beautiful thing.
Yeah.
There's a psychologist called Daniel Offman who talks about our core qualities being gifts of the universe. And he says all of these, all of these challenging behaviors that we have are our gifts from the universe dialed up too high. And they come for free. We have these qualities and these pitfalls that are too much of our strength, they come for free. And if we could understand better that when we're seeing something in somebody else, which we find challenging, it's often too much of a good thing.
Yeah.
Then we get better at empathizing with them. So there's so many that I could talk about this for a long time. There's so many different ways that you can use this. And I've been using it. There's individual games, there's team games. I've been using it as a foundation to more challenging work with teams around communication, around feedback. I do lots of work on nonviolent communication. And so this works beautifully to encourage that psychological safety. It gives them a language to use to challenge each other, to have authentic conversations with each other in a kind and compassionate way. So yeah, it's wonderful stuff. And it's just been a really useful addition to my toolkit. And I've also, done all the training and everything in it. And I've been training others in it as well for the last year. I've been training others in it. So yes, fabulous stuff.
So when we go to your session, Jenny, I can imagine you have no time to feel bored or to, because you have so much of nice things that you combine together. And I think this is the thing when you are a facilitator, you can always grow your toolkit and then have things ready where you think, oh, I can combine this with this and this with this. And, I'm sure you have a lot of fun when you design your sessions.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite bits, actually. Yes. I guess I'm really motivated by wanting folks that attend my workshops or training, not only to achieve the business outcomes that's of course like fundamental to the reason why they're there, but to be engaged and to have an experience, to have a learning experience. And that requires careful design and recognition that people have a very short attention span. But also they learn the training from the back of the room again. I read that, I don't know, about at least 10 years ago. That really changed the way I do training and put much more emphasis on participation and peer-to-peer learning and even attendees doing their own research within a training course and presenting it back and all those different learning styles that folks have. So as somebody with a short attention span, I feel like I'm just acutely aware of losing people after 10 yeah. minutes unless something changes. Do you know what yeah. I mean? Like something changes. So try not to talk, present for more yeah. than 10 minutes at a time before bringing something else in. So yeah, that's one of the things that's motivating. If I see people like doing this, I'm like, let's do heads, shoulders, knees and toes. One of my friends and a wonderful facilitator who's a play alchemist, mm-hmm. Portia Tung. I was just thrilled about 10 years ago to see her in a room, have everybody just stand up in a conference room and do heads, shoulders, knees and toes, knees and toes. Do you have that in French?
Tête, épaule.
Feuille.
What is
genou?
Genou and mollet,
yeah. I think it would be funny for me to try and do in French. But yeah, just little things like that, that playful things that wake people up. I always enjoy
I love to throw candies around the room. I always have like the little pack of Haribo, you know, the ooh, candies. Yeah. And I try to relate to something that have been told in the morning, whatever, during the first warm-up activity, like what was your first job and what was the first job of Sarah, and the one who answer get candies. And it's always nice after the lunch when people are maybe a little bit like not so fit.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Annie. You gave so much insights about how you make your session first safe for the participants, or how you build this psychological safety throughout your workshops. You gave us so much methods to use, and it was really a pleasure to talk to you. And I think you train people for some of these methods, right? Or you do workshops on these methods, right?
Yes, I run a lot of Lego series play workshops. I'm a trainer in Strong Suits. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I run in-person training for somebody. It's a two-day training course to be a Strong Suit certified facilitator, and there'll be some remote training offered from next year. But there's my colleague Ryan is also running remote training as well this year. So if you head to the Strong Suits website, you can find all the training dates on there. It's just Strong Suits, one word, and you'll find all the training available. There's other trainers as well. Yeah.
Yeah, but you will find all the information concerning Jenny in the show notes. Jenny, thank you very, very much for your big smile, for the heart-changing color behind you, and for your kindness. It was a real pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Natty. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I've had a big smile for the last 45 minutes. Yeah, I hope it stays on.
Thank you, and have
Thank
a great
you for
day.
Having me.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't hesitate to contact our guest. You'll find all the information in the show notes. And hey, if you like the content of There's a Workshop for That, please give it a 5 stars on your podcast app. And you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, La Workshoppers. Also, I'd love to read your comments, suggestions of guests, or any question you have. For this, use the form called Hey Natty in the show notes. And until our next episode, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir.